Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you and my buddy John on the other side of the glass. John, just in time for autumn, our first full day of autumn. And guess what? We're going over 100 and then some. So we've got one more, I hope, just one more week or so of unseasonably warm weather. It's Monday, September the 23rd, 2024. We'll begin our 15th year already on the radio here in January. We're coming to you from the Green Thing Zilkalo Village studio. It's all part of Bustos Media and their growing presence here. We've got five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI. All the stations doing very well, quite honestly. This one is KVOI The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to the program with the live stream at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, and we'll have the live line utilized here in a few moments, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday one-on-one today is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Moe and his family have been doing wonderful work in our community. Family owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services. That means Moe comes out and he will make a house call, make sure that the work you had framed goes up on the wall the way where you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, next to Copenhagen. And Monsoon Chocolate has now opened in that little center over there. Moe'sGallery.com also for their fine website. Early voting has now begun for the 2024 presidential election, with voters casting ballots in at least three states. Today, our Monday one-on-one actually is Bill plus two. Because that's necessary today. In studio, Dr. Don Jorgensen returns to the Buckmaster Show. Don, the former chair of the Democrat Party in Pima County. Hey, Don, good to see you.
It's great to see you again, Bill. Thank you.
And on the live line, Matt Klink is joining us. Matt specializes in strategic crisis communication issues, public affairs, and political campaigns. Hey, Matt, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Good afternoon to you both.
Always a pleasure, Matt. All right, Don, let's begin with you. You have seen, as have I, a bunch of presidential campaigns in our lifetime. How would you characterize this one, Don?
I've thought about that, and there's seen a lot of nasty ones. It's not even the nastiest, but I'd have to say it's the most bizarre presidential campaign in my lifetime. And let's just start with the fact, for example, that we have Bernie Sanders and Dick Cheney supporting the same candidate in a presidential election.
That is a bit unusual.
So let's start at that range of craziness. But the other really strange difference is what I call, looking at one candidate in particular, the normalization of abnormal behavior. Candidate actions that never would have been tolerated in the past, would have been automatic disqualifiers, are now ignored or dismissed. We have a candidate this time that is a convicted felon. And still, folks kind of forget this. He's still under indictment for both federal and state crimes. So you have that. You have the same one who's cozying up to authoritarians, wants to be dictator for a day. If we heard any of these in past campaigns, that'd be disqualifiers, let alone someone who supported an insurrection. And it's still just kind of treated as, something that happened. Imagine, the last time we had an insurrection of that type was the Civil War. And imagine Jefferson Davis trying to run for re-election and them being more concerned about his policies than the fact that he tried to overthrow the government.
All right. Hold it right there, Don. Let's bring in Matt. Matt, there's a lot to unpack there for you. Don's got a whole litany here of abnormal behavior.
Yeah, I agreed with the first part of what Don said, that, if Don and I sat down in April of this year and said, let's create a fiction work that talks about a candidate for president being indicted of 34 felonies, the incumbent president of the United States resigning from office after arguably the worst debate performance in U.S. history, U.S. presidential history. An assassination attempt on the president, followed by a second assassination attempt on the president, followed by someone who was viewed as arguably one of the least effective vice presidents in U.S. history, and who was talked about being replaced on the ticket, being summarily given the nomination by party insiders. I think that both Don and I would have said there is no conceivable way that that's going to happen. And then, look, you can add in some of the other craziness that came up that exists right now, that, you know, in spite of all of the headwinds against Donald Trump, some of which I will discount the way in which they were described by Don, but nevertheless, they are headwinds against the incumbent president. We have a race that is essentially tied in almost every, you know, there are only seven states that matter. It's a race that is tied. You would think that, you know, even a candidate as weak as Kamala Harris, who has yet to do a major press conference with anyone because her staff lives in morbid fear that she's unable to string two sentences together, you would think that someone would be running away with it if someone who is, objectively as flawed as Don says that he is. And yet he's probably, I mean, the polls say he's tied, which means that the way Donald Trump underperforms at the polls, he's probably leading right now. So something is going on in this country. I don't quite know what it is, but people, I mean, look, half the population doesn't like Donald Trump. The other half doesn't like the alternative of Kamala Harris. And I think that the candidate that is least well-liked will probably be the one that wins on November 5th.
Interesting point.
How's that for a nice intro?
Yeah, least well-liked, Don Jorgensen?
Well, if you're talking about Trump, I think that's true. What's interesting about that idea, and I agree with Matt that no one would believe this if it was real.
No. It's unreal.
The fact is now voters know Trump, except for the things that have happened in the past few years. And I mentioned them. We don't have to go back to the threats of violence and the insurrection and such. But voters know Trump. The mind's been made up. That number hasn't changed probably in now since 2016.
I'd agree with that. I think that he's got that solid core base.
And it's not moved. There's no movement there. There is the opportunity for Harris to move. And we're seeing that. The debate did a little bit. Just to correct Matt a little bit, the president didn't resign. He just chose not to run again. And it was probably one of the worst debate performances in a long time, which
Don,
took away
Don,
from Trump's
craziness.
You keep
saying that America doesn't believe you.
that it was one of the worst of all time? Yeah. Overshadowed the craziness.
He was pushed out. The party knew he was not allowed.
Well, he's still president of the United States. That's my correction.
Is he?
For you.
Is he?
I want to hit another point. You comment about Harris not being well-liked.
Yeah.
She has hit historic numbers with an increase of 15% in her favorability ratings since the debate and since she came and or just before the debate, since she came into the race.
You're saying she made up a lot of ground.
She made up a lot of ground and is starting to lead where Biden was behind. And so that is the big change. And that's the fear, I think, on the right is Trump has nowhere to go. Harris does. And the other big difference in this race is you mentioned the press conferences. Well, I haven't seen Trump do a coherent press conference either, but the media approach is different.
Not.
And Matt, I think you'll agree with this. Legacy media matters less this year. It's focused on targeted media, social media, particularly where new voters and younger voters are.
Okay. Okay, Matt, go ahead.
I mean, look, as someone who makes his living advising candidates and large companies on how to communicate, you know, that I will, yes, Don is correct that the legacy media is less important, but that still doesn't negate the fact that most candidates stand. You notice how we turn that little word, a cogent press conference. I mean, Kamala Harris hasn't done a press conference, cogent or otherwise. she is because her staff lives in mortal fear of her opening her mouth in a non-prepared setting. She couldn't answer the first question in the debate that happened about, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? But hey, she's grew up in a middle-class family, which doesn't answer any question. So, I mean, look, the bottom line about all this is we can talk about what Donald Trump is or isn't doing. Kamala Harris has not sealed the deal. The race is close if you look at the polling in the swing states, but she should be ahead by a lot more. I think the private polling that I've seen, leaving aside the public polling, which has traditionally undersampled Trump voters, he's winning. And that's why the Harris campaign lives in mortal fear. And you can talk about turning out young voters all you want. Donald Trump is going to have historic turnout among Latino men and African-American men, in part because they're suffering under Bidenomics, where you pay more to live less. And she can't escape that she has been leading the government and leading this economic recovery where everything costs more for the last 3.5 years. People are hurting, and providing more allegedly free money, which is code word for anybody who pays taxes, is going to pay more.
All right.
That's not going to solve this for the American people.
Let's pause right there. And Don, you can pick it up after we take the break. It is the Monday One-on-One. Matt Klink is with us on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday One-on-One is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. We'll have more with Don Jorgensen and Matt Klink talking about early voting now underway for presidential election 2024. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities, The News & Suns media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown. Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Monday one-on-one, and early voting is underway across the country in three states at least. The one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lawn Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. With me in studio, former chairman of the Democrat Party in Pima County, Dr. Don Jorgensen, and on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, Matt Klink. Don, let's begin with you. What's different? We talked about what's different in this cycle, and you said, rightly so, I believe, it, and Matt agrees with pretty much everything you said. It's something that even a fiction writer couldn't, I don't think, envision. A woman ran for president in 2016, Hillary Clinton, not successful. What makes this go round different?
Couple of key reasons. Back then, Trump was the shiny new thing. He was a celebrity. He brought that with him. He had the image of the businessman bringing new ideas. We know that was false, but that's a case where Clinton was bringing the baggage, the family baggage, the politics of usual idea, and not as well liked by other women. This time, the script has flipped. Now it's Trump that is considered the old, he is the older candidate, old ideas, nothing new, bringing the baggage, many of the things we talked about earlier. And it's Vice President Harris that is bringing the energy. She's attracting new voters, and she's presenting new plans, new ideas. The issue came up earlier about the press conferences. The goal is to get your message out, policies out, plans out. And Vice President Harris has done that through these other avenues. That's the goal, to get to the voters. And one important block are new voters. Since the debate, the numbers of new registered voters, particularly among young people, have skyrocketed. And these aren't people who are jumping in because they want to vote for Trump necessarily. They already know Trump. Undecided voters know Trump. They've known him for 9 years. I think they're either at the point now where they're going to sit it out or they're going to vote for Harris. And so her focused media and her focused communication about her policies and plans, which she have laid out clearly, unlike Trump, are resonating with these voters.
All right, let's bring in Matt Klink. Matt, what do you think?
I will definitely give Don credit. Hillary Clinton ran a much different campaign than Kamala Harris is running. I can tell you from having spoken with the gentleman that ran her campaign, that their modeling was off, and that's why they didn't go into key precincts in Michigan and Wisconsin, even though the campaign was others that were familiar with those states were telling them that they were not running properly in those states.
Very true.
But I think that it is a very, very far cry to say Kamala Harris has done anything but make her policy projections clear. She didn't have policy on her website until they cut and paste a document from the Biden-Harris ticket. She has been purposefully vague, but I will tell you, she's using the Obama people, and they are very good at projecting an image of her. And I do think that has complete. They have put it this way: they completely changed her persona from a largely ineffective vice president, someone who was shuffled off to second or third tier issues. And she's
Call women's reproductive rights a second or third tier issue.
okay, but I would call the, you know, she was not someone that was the A team. It was Biden or it was nobody else. So, but then look, now we have the case where the election's ongoing and she still hasn't cleared up messes about her position on fracking, her position on supporting the Green New Deal.
She's been very clear about fracking since the debate.
Her values have never changed, or she addressed it in the presidential debate. Well, no, she didn't. And the news media that you say is less relevant, they never pressed her on it because they are in the bag for Kamala Harris. So the challenge that Mrs. Harris has, or Ms. Harris has, in running right now is that she says she's for the joy and stuff like, you know, and she's for an opportunity economy. Nobody knows what that means. So, and that's why she hasn't closed the deal. And that's why the race is essentially tied, which I believe that Donald Trump is actually ahead, because the polling will undercount Donald Trump voters.
Well, she'd been very clear about the opportunity economy, unlike Donald Trump, where she's talked about providing assistance to new small business owners, to providing tax credits for the middle class who are seeking to buy new homes or start new businesses or need childcare. She's focused on reduce the cost of prescription drugs that are going to help seniors and families across the board. Let's talk about handouts. Trump wants to give handouts to billionaires, not to the working class. Harris is focused on the working class and been very clear about those policies. And we haven't even talked about foreign policy, where we have one candidate who wants to support democracy and Ukraine, and the other candidate who supports Putin and what he wants.
How about the fracking? I thought she had flat out said that she would allow fracking. Matt?
Before she said that she opposed fracking. So, I mean, look, the people in Pennsylvania are not so sure. That's why Donald Trump is doing really, really well in Western Pennsylvania right now, because they don't believe her. And let's talk about foreign policy, because I'd love to talk about that. So, Russia invaded the Ukraine twice, once in 2014 under Barack Obama, and a second time under Joe Biden. Donald Trump signs the Abraham Accords. During Joe Biden's reign and Kamala Harris's reign, Hamas attacks Israel. Let's not forget that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, and yet the Biden and Harris campaigns, or elected official regime, has gone out of their way to criticize Israel. They say on the one hand that they support them, yet they delayed them going into Rafah and other places. Let's talk about Iran, where they have provided hundreds of billions of dollars to the Iranians. And guess what? What does Iran do? They're funding the Houthis in Yemen, which, by the way, the Biden and Harris administration removed from the terror list. They're funding Hamas, which attacked Israel on October 7th.
But you're not addressing Trump's foreign policy plan. That's the question.
Well, Trump, one at a time. Trump, go ahead, Don.
We know Trump's foreign policy because we saw how effective it was during his 4 years in office.
I'll argue with that.
We don't know about Kamala Harris's policy.
Okay, go ahead, Don.
Kamala Harris was the person who went over to Europe at the very start of the Ukraine war, brought the NATO allies together to support and made the case to support Ukraine. That's what's happening now. Trump's policy is peace at an end of the war under Putin's request, to give in to his demands. Trump has talked about supporting dictators and authoritarians. He calls Viktor Orban his role model, sucking up to Kim Jong-un. So, you know, who knows what his foreign policy is other than to kowtow to dictators, because he said he wanted to be one on day one, whereas Kamala Harris has supported Israel. They have provided the funding for Israel to continue to defend themselves and to defend themselves against Iran. So it's very clear.
Are we any closer to victory in Ukraine with all of the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been spent over? And what about the 100,000 Ukrainians that have died And the average age of the Ukrainian fighting person is now in their 40s.
Yes, it is a tragic war. We don't disagree with that, but we're not hearing anything.
A blank check?
All right, guys, let's wrap it up here. Right. Don, Harris wins the popular vote, as did Hillary Clinton. Harris wins the popular vote and will eke out the victory at the Electoral College. Is that what you're seeing?
That's what I see. And I'll note, Matt made a really good point in the beginning that we could love to discuss another time, and that's that only 7 states matter. That's what's wrong with the Electoral College and the current process, is that a lot of folks, their votes in many ways don't count.
Yep.
You know, fortunately, here in Arizona, every vote does count.
Okay, Matt, your final thoughts.
Kamala Harris wins the popular vote by about 7 million people, largely because of large municipalities on the West and East Coast. I think that Donald Trump wins. He wins Georgia. I think he's going to win Arizona. I think that Kamala Harris wins Nevada, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and everything comes down to Pennsylvania. And right now, I give the edge to Trump. But it'll be a squeaker. I think that, put it this way, there will be a lot more for Don and I to come back and talk on multiple occasions.
All right, guys, got to go. Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Thank you, Don Jorgensen. Thank you, Matt Klink.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Don Jorgensen and Matt Klink. Normally, we don't do politics on the Monday one-on-one, but after all, we've got the presidential election voting now underway, so we appreciate both of their opinions. The Buckmaster Show studios, named after Green Things and Zocalo Village, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, looking real good after the summer rains. It's also home to the Zocalo Village, all that beautiful imported Talavera pottery, but they have more than pottery. They've got some beautiful handcrafted dining room sets made out of mesquite and other regional woods, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com, the two websites. They're in the 53rd year of business, and they're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line is sponsored by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. On our program on Friday, we spent nearly an hour. Our Friday Focus interview was with Tom Horn, Superintendent of Public Instruction in Arizona. And of course, this is Mr. Horn's second time being elected to that particular post. And we covered a lot of ground, and we're going to kind of dissect some of the things he said with our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, who is a lifelong educator, former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus, and associate dean of the U of A College of Education. A former Arizona Superintendent of the Year, he remains very active in the Tucson community. In fact, he's currently president of the Interfaith Community Services Board of Directors. Good to see you, Bob.
Oh,
how are
it's
you?
Nice to be back in the studio.
Good to have
too.
You back in studio. We missed a couple of months with you, but we're glad you are back with us. So, teacher raises, we spent quite a bit of time with Mr. Horn about that.
Yeah, I listened to the podcast, Bill, and took copious notes because
good.
I wanted to be sure that I was hearing accurately what Superintendent Horn was talking about. And, of course, there's always the other side of the coin, and I'd kind of like to run through some of the areas that he talked about and give you my candid response to his comments.
Well, he talked a lot about teacher raises, but he said there was more to it than the money.
And well,
I think,
there is.
Yeah, the discipline
is,
came
but,
up.
But, you know, one of the bills that was on the table was a $10,000 teacher salary increase. Well, we know that salaries in Arizona for teachers are low. They're in the lowest quartile. And what was being proposed by the Republicans in the legislature was a $10,000 raise,
yeah,
which would have brought teachers up into the top quartile, which is very decent, very commendable.
Why was that shot down?
Well, the devil is in the details. You know, he said something about the Arizona Teachers Association opposing that increase, and I didn't know why. That was curious to me, because why would the Teachers Association oppose such a large amount of money?
Sure sounds
which, by
counterintuitive.
The way, and he didn't mention, but I should mention that it wasn't $10,000 in 1 year. It was actually a two-step process. So it was $5,000 a year over it was a two-year package.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have amounted to about $1.1 billion, out of the the general fund. The problem is that when they did a financial analysis of the proposal, it was not sustainable. I mean, it's if you look at those 2 years, you could say, well, we could give that bump, but then you're talking about that bump, you know, in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And it, financial analysis indicated it would not be, unless there was more money taken out of the general account for education, which basically would have taken money away from other services in education. So that's why the AEA was very skeptical of the proposal, because it would have supplanted other money in the budget. And so they said no. They said it didn't really make any sense. And the other detail of that was it did not include all teachers. It did not include special education teachers. It didn't include reading specialists. It didn't include counselors. So there was a certain segment of the population that was being excluded. So it wasn't a clean bill, and it's not about turning down the money, you know, pure and simple. It's about how are you going to package it, how are you going to make it sustainable, and how are you going to include everybody. And so I didn't hear Mr. Horn give those kind of details. I understand why it would be a credit to him to try to support those dollars, but he's not going to be in office in perpetuity, and this would have been something that I think probably would not have been financially sound.
While we're talking about teachers, he said they're also leaving because of the issue of school discipline.
They are, and, you know, I suspect that is a reason. Mm-hmm. I suspect that's a reason that some teachers are leaving. I mean, it is, the world in the classroom is not what you remember it, what I remember it. Discipline is an issue in terms of respect for teachers, in terms of listening, active engagement. There's a lot of distractions, and I think a lot of teachers are frustrated with that. And quite honestly, I'm not sure all teachers receive the kind of training to have adequate classroom management skills to deal with these things. I mean, the answer to classroom management is not simply signing a referral slip and sending the student to the principal. I mean, principal can have a fireside chat with that student, but they are going to come back to the classroom. And if something doesn't happen, if there isn't any intervention, such as counseling or some other kinds of things, that problem is going to be pervasive. Yeah. And I know that Mr. Horn wants a quick fix to that disciplinary problem. And the way he would like to deal with it is to ultimately penalize school districts by looking at their discipline records, by the referral records. And if teachers say, we don't feel like enough has been done, that there be a consequence. And the consequence would be, let's say you're in your school rating, you're given a B. Well, they would lower that grade to a C. And that would be, you know, something that you could say to schools, if you're not doing your job, that's going to be the consequence. How that would be measured, we're not sure, but he's saying that there has to be a level of satisfaction of at least 75%.
Mm.
75% of what? I don't
know.
Yeah,
how do you measure something like that? I mean,
well, there's no metric. No. There's no metric. It's just talk. Mm-hmm. Some would even say it's just babble, because mm-hmm. it just really doesn't make a lot of sense. Absolutely, I agree that discipline needs to be a priority. Discipline is a major issue on minds of teachers who are in the classroom and teachers who are leaving the classroom. But again, we need to give them better training. There are programs within the school system for intervention. Sometimes it's a timeout. Sometimes it's a special classroom for students who aren't able to work within the system. We don't use corporal punishment anymore, Bill. I think that probably, I would suspect, some people think that should come back.
Yeah.
You can't suspend everybody. You can't expel everybody. You're going to have to live with the hand you've been dealt. And so teachers have to work with that. Obviously, you need support of administrators as well. But I don't know if teachers are always going to be satisfied. I can remember as a principal, I used to have teachers who would just every day bombard me with referrals. There are other teachers, I never got a single referral.
Mm.
Most teachers, effective teachers, can handle their own discipline problems. There are the outliers that need to be sent to the office, but by and large, teachers should be handling these issues. And maybe they're leaving the classroom because they can't, and maybe that isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, let's take a break right here. More with Dr. Robert Hendricks. We're kind of deconstructing some of the things that were said during the hour on Friday with Superintendent Horn, including we need to talk about, when we come back after the break, Mr. Horn's initiative to ban cell phones, and also those unspent school voucher dollars. Need to address both of those topics right after this.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. They had probably one of the most beautiful weekends over in Silver City. 75 for the high. The overnight low was in the mid-40s. So fall is certainly happening over in the land of enchantment. Only about a three-hour drive. This is a perfect time of year to take that drive over to Silver City. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. A ton of stuff to do, including some great restaurants. If you like New Mexican cuisine, they'll ask you, do you want red or green chili? So that's the first question when you sit down for a meal in New Mexico. All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education. We're deconstructing the interview that I did. Mr. Horn, Tom Horn, Superintendent of Public Instruction. We covered a lot of ground on Friday. We brought up, or I brought up, the $300 million-plus money that is unspent in school voucher dollars that's just kind of just sitting there. And I said to Mr. Horn, how about just returning at least to the that money to the general fund? Bob Hendricks, your thoughts on that area of the interview?
Well, we've gone back and forth on the amount of money, unanticipated money that's been spent on this voucher program. And clearly, to take this money and put it back in the general fund would help balance, you know, what is really sort of an out of control, bloated amount of money that's being spent on the educational scholarships. Why is there such a surplus?
I don't know.
Well, I do.
Okay.
I do. it's kind of a secret, not a very closed secret, but It's a secret among the people who receive these dollars, because, Bill, if you don't spend the money, mm-hmm. you can bank it.
Oh.
You can roll it over to the next year.
Okay.
And then you can roll over to the next year. And then when your youngster graduates from high school,
what happens then?
That money is available for you to use for university tuition.
Oh.
So why spend it when you can bank it? You know, the amount of excess this year is double what it was last year.
Uh-huh.
And for the simple reason, and I'm not saying every individual does it this way, but if you're smart about it, and particularly if you're a homeschooler, I mean, you can bank a huge amount of money. Just bank it for the following year, and every number of years that you are your youngster is in the program, you can, you know, it's like a bank account that is available for free tuition.
Is that what this program was originally designed for?
No. And I can tell you that I have some good friends who are very supportive of the voucher program, but they are not supportive of this idea of banking. It's that was never the intention, and it's not talked about. Mr. Horn didn't talk about it either.
No, no.
But, and I noticed that he wasn't willing to make a commitment on whether the money should be returned or not.
No.
And I think that his job is to make a commitment one way or the other. If he supports it, fine. But tell us that.
No, he would not commit.
As a state superintendent of education, of all education, He needs to be an advocate, and he needs to tell us where he stands. And I'm sorry that he doesn't do that.
Didn't he kind of kick the can down the road on that one by saying that it's up to the legislature?
It's up to the legislature. But he can still have an opinion
Of course.
To express to the legislature.
Of course.
So there was another item that we need to cover here and got less than, about 5 minutes. This is a big issue, the cell phones. Some of the districts around the state have worked out plans that I think are working.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. You know, there was a bill that got bipartisan support that went to the governor, and the governor turned it down, vetoed it. And there are actually four states in the country that have a restriction on use of cell phones in the classroom. They're Florida, Alabama, South Carolina, and Utah. Seem to be working reasonably well. There's also a handful of other states that have simply said, local school districts create a policy. I have a feeling that is the way the governor was leaning.
When she
simply say, let's turn it back to the school districts. They need to provide a policy. Quite frankly, most districts have a policy, because if you're going to be responsible as a school district, you've got to deal with this issue, because it is a big issue.
It is.
And it's got to be. So districts have been left to local control to develop a policy. There's a third group of people, a third group of states, Delaware and Arkansas, who've kind of put an incentive to school districts. They're providing pilot money for these plastic pouches. Maybe you've seen them in theaters or concerts and so forth, where you have to put your cell phone or something in this, and it locks as a magnetic lock. And so these pouches are available at a price, and students put their cell phones in it. They can't use them. They can't access them. And so that's one way to control as well. But honestly, my opinion is that cell phones do have some instructional value. Mr. Horn is correct. They are a distraction. They shouldn't be used socially in the classroom. But teachers have found all kinds of ways to control that. But there are also times that cell phones can be used for projects, for research and so forth, and I would advocate that. Mr. Horn talked about the safety issue. Well, the safety issue is there. If a student has a cell phone and there's an issue, they're still going to have access to that cell phone, because districts are not saying you can't bring your cell phone. They're just saying you can't use it. So this cell phone could be in a purse. It could be in a pocket. It could be in a laptop, in a laptop bag. And so students can use those phones. So the idea that you're not going to be able to keep students from using the phones during those times of safety doesn't make sense.
So most districts already have a plan. You keep the cell phone in your backpack.
Oh, yeah, they do.
So, yeah.
You can keep it, you just can't use it. And some districts say you can use it between classrooms. You can use it at lunchtime. You just can't use it in what we call the instructional workplace, which is the classroom.
Any final thoughts on Mr. Horn?
Well, he did give one statistic, which I was curious about because I had not heard this. He talked about the Arizona Education Association having only 20% of its teachers as members.
Right.
I did not know that. And I fact-checked it, and he's absolutely correct. Dwindling numbers.
Wow.
And one of the reasons is that the dues are exceedingly expensive. If you belong to the local association, you also are required to belong to the national association. So it's going to depend district by district, but I'm going to say that the average cost for a teacher to belong to the association is $700 a year.
Wow.
What do they get for that?
I don't know.
Don't know either, Bill, because if they're negotiating for teachers, they negotiate for all teachers. So if you're a teacher representative,
whether you're in the group or not,
it doesn't make any difference. In fact, in California, it used to be that all teachers were required to belong. And in 2018, the courts prevented that from happening because they said it wouldn't make any difference if you belonged or not. You know, every teacher is entitled to the same benefits.
All right, Bob Hendricks, always a pleasure. Okay. Thank you. Good half hour. Well, that will do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks and John on the other side of the glass, Bill wishing everybody well.